Good evening, everybody. Did everybody get your pink slip? That's an ominous question, isn't it? I suggested to Tina that she use a salmon color tonight. We were out of salmon, which at the same time somebody had come in for some groceries. And so when she said we were out of salmon, I thought she was talking about canned goods back in the pantry. But it was paper. Anyway, the worksheets we have tonight are pink. Welcome to everybody who's here. Welcome to all of you online. We're glad to have you in our study of Judges. We are in Judges chapter 7 tonight, continuing to look at Gideon, also called Jerubbaal, or Jerubbaal. Kirk, good to see you. You doing all right? All right. We've got the first 15 verses that'll take us down through the first three points and fill in all these blanks, and there's a lot to talk about with regard to this. It's an interesting account. As judges go, some just to get a couple of verses, but this is kind of a long, drawn-out account of how things came about and how things happened, and it's a wonderful story to see God's interaction with Gideon in convincing him to do the right thing. So let's look at the first 15 verses. We'll split them up. I'll split them up in two. If we got two readers, somebody for verses 1 through 8 of chapter 7, who would like to do that? All right. Matt has got the first 8 verses, and who will take 9 through 15? All right, that's Larry. That was your hand, wasn't it, Larry?
Yes,
sir. Okay, all right.
I can see now.
You got what?
I had cataract surgery.
You had cataract surgery. All right, well, good deal. It's amazing what they can do these days. Matt, 1 through 8.
Then Jeroboam, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him rose early and camped beside the spring of Perah. And the camp of Midian was north of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. The Lord said to Gideon, "The people with you are too many for me to give to the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel boast over me, saying, 'My own hand has saved me.' Now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, 'Whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from the Mount Gilead.' And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained. And the Lord said to Gideon, 'The people are still too many. Take them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. And anyone whom I say to you, 'This one shall go with you,' shall go with you. And anyone of whom I say to you, 'This one shall not go with you,' shall not go." So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, "Everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink. And the number of those who lapped, putting their hands to their mouths, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people knelt down to drink water. And the Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hand, and let all the others go, every man to his home." Provisions in their hands and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, but retained the 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley.
Now the same night it came about that the Lord said to him, "Arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down, go with pure your shoulder down to the camp, and you will hear what they say, and afterward your hand will be strengthened, that you may go down against the camp." So he went with Pur, his servant, down to the outpost of the army that was in the camp. Now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. When Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. And he said, "Behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley bread was tumbling tumbling into the camp of Midian, and it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat. His friend replied, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hand." When Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation, he bowed and worshipped. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands."
All right, thank you both for reading. Let's fill in some blanks here. In chapter 6, 34 to 35, we're backing up a chapter we didn't read yet tonight. But that's where we read that after the blank of the Lord came upon Gideon, Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. He blew the trumpet to gather an army from several blanks of blank, from several tribes of Israel. So he's gathering an Israelite army. These are not mercenaries. They're Israelites from several different tribes. In 7:2, the Lord tells Gideon that there are blank, blank for him to give Midian into their hands. Too many. Too many. So blow the trumpet. Spirit of the Lord leads him to blow the trumpet. He gathers a large number of troops. And God says, that's too many. God told him to excuse from battle those who were what? Oh, fearful. Fearful, yes. Fearful or afraid or scared. You spell that however you want to. Of the 32,000 that had assembled, blank left. 22,000 left. Oh, we don't have to fight if we're afraid. I'm out of here. Leaving Gideon only 10,000. Now, in case you're curious, the number 32,000 never appears in the text. But it does tell us 22,000 left and 10,000 remained. Even I can do that math. While the Midianites were like blank for number, and it's recorded twice, once in 6 and once in 7, they were like locusts for number. Number 2, regarding the 10,000, God said there were blank too many, still too many. Now just imagine you're Gideon. The Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east, they're spread out. It says like locusts. Another part of the text says like the sand of the seashore. And he rallies an army of 32,000 and 22,000 of them leave. God says, that's what you got left, those 10,000, that's still too many. He told Gideon to take his men to water and keep those who put their blank to their blank, who put their hands to their mouth to drink, as opposed to those who blank down to drink, who knelt down to drink. So you watch, Gideon, and you see. Out of these 10,000 guys, how long do you suppose that took to watch 10,000 guys get a drink? I'm glad some of the details aren't in here. God does not blank his reason for making this distinction. He doesn't explain his reason for making this distinction between those who drank, but says that he will blank Israel with the blank men who are now left for Gideon to use. He will deliver Israel with the blank men. 300, that's the number. Isn't that interesting? They made a movie not that many years ago. Well, I'm old, and so movies still seem new after they're 10 years old. They made a movie about the 300, and it was a very different story than this one. Yes?
I heard it explained one time that we speculated that those men that were on their knees that would drink were more alert looking around,
mm-hmm.
and he's taking the less alert to go along with the less numbers. So that it was like, you know, well, this is the worst bunch. I wouldn't pick them. I'd pick these guys that were alert.
Right.
Or I'd take the 32,000 that came in and go. So it was kind of following that same line.
I heard that same thing when I was a kid, and I heard it so often that I thought it was in the text. And so when I finally read the text for myself, looking for that and thinking about that and saying, that's not in there. It's like, well, why isn't that in there? Well, because God doesn't explain why. There are all kinds of possibilities, but
speculation.
Yeah, speculation, exactly. Nothing wrong with speculating. Just be careful that it doesn't make it into your mind as scripture. And that happens sometimes. Let's see. Number three. Oh, wait a minute. All of the other men are sent home. Sent home. It says back to their tents, but that's what that means, sent home. Now, if you've ever been in the military, you can relate to this. Whistle blows. You jump out of the rack. That's what they call it in the military. You can't call things the same stuff in civilian life that you call them in the military. You got to make up some funky military name for it. So you get out of bed, you put your uniform on, you scramble down to formation, and then they, okay, you three stay. The rest of you go home. Go back to the barracks, whatever. Oh, okay, we got up for this. And then you get back, and the horn goes off again. Anyway, that's just military life. This is kind of like that. Number three, on the night of the same day, God told Gideon that he had blanked the Midianites into his hands. He had given them into his hands. Where are the Midianites? They're still down there, camped all over the place in the Valley of Jezreel. But God says, I have given them into your hands. This is reminiscent of God telling blank that the city of blank was his before they had even begun to blank around it. And of course the reference is Joshua 6, so guess. God told Joshua the same thing. They haven't even approached the city. They're just camped outside of it. And God says, I have given the city into your hand. It's a done deal. Hadn't even told him the plan for marching around it. Blowing the trumpets. By the way, whoever would come up with either one of these plans? March around a city and blow trumpets so the walls fall down, shouting at the same time. Whoever would say, just get around them at night with trumpets and torches and they'll kill themselves and run off fleeing. God's way always works. Nevertheless, this is the fourth line down in number three. Nevertheless, the Lord told Gideon that if he were blank, if you're afraid, that he was to take his blank Purah servant, Purah, and go right down into the blank blank. The enemy camp. Go right down into the enemy camp, or whatever you would fill in with those blanks that is that same thing. When Gideon did this, he overheard a man telling his friend about a dream. Guy had a dream. A dream he had about a loaf of blank bread, barley bread, that tumbled into their camp and struck a tent, knocking it flat. The friend who was told this dream blanked the dream. He interpreted the dream to mean that God had given Midian into the hand of Gideon and mentioned him by name. I found that interesting. When Gideon heard this, he What did Gideon do when he heard all that? He worshiped. Bowed his head and he worshiped. Now let's talk a little bit about this before we move on. What reason did God give that there were too many Israelites to start with? So it would be clear when this is all over, I don't want there to be an opportunity for Israel to say, I've delivered myself by my own hand. But this is going to be something that everybody's going to know. It's God. Bob?
More speculation. I'll bet you at the beginning, when those 32,000 showed up,
right. Because 32,000 against those who were gathered like locusts, the way the Midianites are described, not be that many. So he's probably looking for more, and God said, oh, you got too many. Oh, well, how many are we going to send home? All of them but 300. So you're going to give us some M1A1 Abrams tanks or some armored personnel carriers or a couple of A-10s. What's going on here? Nope. You just need those guys. That's all you need right there. So he's got 300. And this is like Joshua at Jericho. God gave Joshua Jericho. God has given Midian into Gideon's hand before he even knows what the battle plan is. Is there a parallel? Mike? Right, you got something else. Yeah.
Well, it strikes me that the 32,000 show up, so there's no joy in his heart. 32,000, and you must calculate all of a sudden, I've got 32,000, I can't even count how many these other guys have. So he didn't go from confidence to lack of confidence. He goes from discouragement to, that this is an unbelievable situation.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We're already down. We're already the underdogs. How far down are you going to bring us? So,
So how are we going to save the world? Imagine that conversation in heaven. I don't think they had this conversation. They just knew this. Well, we're going to send a baby down there. He's going to be born in a manger. Oh, to great opulence? There won't even be room for him in the local hotel. He's going to have to be born and stay where the animals are. And, well, why is that? Well, because he won't even be in his own hometown. His parents will have had to move because the government's taxing him and they got to go to this place. Okay, well, how is this boy going to grow up? Well, he's going to be working with his hands all the time. Builder, carpenter, construction work.
The reality of it, God doesn't need Gideon or his army or anything. He just wants to take him out.
Right.
We get caught up. It makes great movie and it's a wonderful story to whittle it down to 300 against all the numbers. I just wonder if the whole focal point, the whole point was God was working on Gideon.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point.
Right.
I'm conditioning you to me. Are you going to follow me? I'm going to take these guys out with either a storm or a sickness or vipers or whatever I decide I'm going to do, or the angel of death. Got plenty of choices. That he gave you. That made the whole scene set up to work on you.
Now, see, this is speculation too, but it's speculation that makes sense. And also, not just Gideon, but say you're one of those 22,000 guys. Man, I kind of got a bad back and I don't hear too well. Maybe I better not be going to battle. At least that's what I'm going to tell people. And so you're told you can go home. And so there's 22,000 of you leaving. And you might be looking back thinking, well, so what's going to happen with those guys that are left? That's not very many. Oh, well, I guess we'll see. And then you're one of the, see, I didn't do the math, 990,000. Okay, yeah, that many, what Judy said. That are leaving after the 300 are picked, and you're going, what? What is going on here? Gideon must be out of his mind to be doing this if they're not privy to what God has told Gideon. And then when the whole thing's over, everybody would be looking back and saying, wow, I never thought it would be like this. And what do you think all those people who were on Pentecost said that day about the Messiah. I never thought it would be like this. I was expecting something totally different, and look what we've got. He came and we killed him. Why did we kill him? Because he did horrible things? No, he did everything perfect. He gave the sight back to the blind. He gave hearing back to the deaf. He made the lame walk. He raised the dead, and we still killed him because he wasn't what we expected. When does God ever do what we expect him to do? Wouldn't it scare you if you could figure God out with your little mind? The whole book from cover to cover is trying to train us to believe in God and to believe in God against the odds, against what we would think were the obvious evidences that that'll never work. Turn the other cheek, how could that work? Well, so far, everything has worked. And Gideon's got to be learning this, and the Israelites have to be learning this, and who knows Gideon's name? A Midianite knows his name. How does he know Gideon's name? And what are the odds that that guy, that random guy in Midian, would have a dream like that? And what are the odds that that random guy who had that dream would decide to tell his buddy about that right then when Gideon was there? And what are the odds that Gideon and his servant Pura would wind up being close enough to overhear this conversation? What are the odds?
If we'll think back ourselves over the last 10, 15, 20, maybe 30 years, and just think back then, did you have any idea you would be where you are now doing what you do? And you can start seeing God working through your life.
Yes.
And everything.
Have you ever stopped and thought, I wish I'd written down all the times God showed up when I was thinking, I'm not going to make it through this? And you made it through that. Here you are. Here we are tonight. How'd we get here? Grace, providence of God brought us here. Kicking and screaming sometimes. But here we are. This book is so out of date and irrelevant. Jericho belonged to Joshua before he even stepped foot towards it. The Midianites are conquered before Gideon even knows the plan. Is there a parallel at all for us? We win. Shannon?
Pronounces the victory before the battle even starts.
Mm-hmm.
He's told us we've got eternal life. And we're not even to that point yet. But it's promised to us. And if it's promised to the 300 and Gideon and Jericho, or Joshua, then we should be just as, believe in it just as much as.
Just believe. Put your faith in me. And it's not even the simple mental assent that what I'm telling is true. It's, are you going to follow through with what I tell you? Are you guys that are afraid, you going to go on home? Because I told you to go home, so go home. Okay, we'll go home. You other guys that leave the 300, you're going to go home too. Okay, we'll go home. You got to do what you got to do, even if it doesn't make sense to you. And we're not told what any of those guys thought about any of this. We're just trying to put ourselves in the situation and make some sense of it. Well, let's move on to our next section, for our time is gone. 7, it's verses 16 to 25. I've got it divided up into two sections, verses 16 to 23. Who'd like to read that? 16 to 23. Any reader for that part right there? All right, Shannon and Bob. Bob, you'll get 24 to 25. Big, long text right there.
Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. Watch me, he told them. Follow my lead, and when I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they had changed the guard. They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. Three companies blew their trumpets and smashed the jars, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying as they fled. When the 300 trumpets sounded, the Lord caused the men throughout the camp to turn on each other with their swords. The army fled to Beth Shittah towards Zerah, as far as the border of Abel Mahola near Tabith. Israelites from Naphtali, Asher, and Manasseh were called out, and they pursued the Midianites. Gideon sent messengers throughout the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against Midianites and seize the waters of the Jordan ahead of them as far as Beth Barah." So all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they took the waters of the Jordan as far as Beth Barah.
They captured the two leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb, and they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeeb by the long crest of Zeeb. While they pursued Midian, they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon across the Jordan.
All right. Thank you, guys. Number four, Gideon blanked his men into blank companies. He divided his men into three companies. There is an axiom that I've heard all my life. Divide and conquer. What does that mean? It means if you can divide your enemy up, they'll be easier to conquer. How is Gideon starting out? He's dividing up his force. It's like, what are you crazy? You've only got 300 and you're dividing up those 300. That's what he's doing. Who told him to do that? God? Okay, then it's going to work. Each man had a blank, but also a blank with a picture over it. Each man had a trumpet, but also a torch. Nothing said about a sword, a spear, a shield, or a buckler, or armor, nothing. No slings, a trumpet, and a torch with a pitcher. Gideon ordered that on his signal, each man would blank his trumpet, blow his trumpet, and blank the pitchers, break the pitchers, allowing the glow of blank torches to be seen all around their camp. And there would be the number, 300 torches. Technically, 301, because Gideon's there. Now just imagine, there are no strings of electric lights going through camp. So you can see, nobody's got a headlamp or a flashlight. Probably dark as it could be. And if you're a soldier like most soldiers are, you've probably had a little to drink before you went to bed. And all of a sudden in the middle of the night, you hear trumpets sounding. That can't be good. You come out of your tent, and everywhere you look, man, there's a bunch of torches over there and a bunch of torches over there. And then what does it say in verse 22 of chapter 7? When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army. So it wasn't accidental or incidental. It was the Lord's doing that in this circumstance, that confusion would reign. Let's finish up number four there. Each Israelite simply blank in blank. He stood in place. In another place, not here, but God says, "I will fight for you." And that's what God is doing here. Each Israelite simply stood in place. God set the blank of the Midianites, the swords of the Midianites, blank one another, against one another, as they blank in disarray. And that word would be fled. They fled in disarray. Gideon called the Israelites to blank their enemies pursue their enemies, which they did, capturing and executing their blank leaders. Two leaders, Oreb and Zeb, were their names. If you'll just go through, take a cursory reading of the Bible and look at the things that God does to help his people, to deliver his people, to provide for his people, it's never something that you would have expected to happen. As a matter of fact, when you think about what you would have Jesus to do as a miracle, what would you come up with if you were going to have Jesus do a miracle? I wonder why didn't he just lift up and fly off around Jerusalem? Hey, everybody, I'm your Messiah. How neat would that have been? When Moses came down off Mount Sinai, describe him. His face glowed. His face glowed in such a way that people were afraid of him. And they asked him, put a veil over your face. Now, me looking back on that, I thought, how crazy were those people? They should have been, Moses, we need to take you everywhere and show the whole world what it's like to be in the presence of our God. And instead it's, oh, put a veil over that. We can't, Too much, too much. Too holy, too righteous, too impressive. John?
Around, the focus would be on why is he flying and what's going on as opposed to the man.
I'm sorry?
If he was be flying around, they would be amazed at him flying around and focused on that and not on him and his mission.
Well, think about what he did do, especially with regard to feeding the 5,000 with some bread and fish. And later on, they come to him again, and what does he tell them? You're not coming to me because I'm the Messiah. You came because you ate and got your belly full, basically is what he tells them. So they're in the presence of God, but they can't see it. They can't figure it out. They haven't quite got it. Somehow Peter gets it, but Peter's not even able to fully comprehend. What does Peter say when Jesus asks him, who do men say that I am? Some? Yeah, Elijah, Jeremiah, John the Baptist, one of the prophets. And then Jesus says, well, who do you say I am? So you're the Christ, which is Messiah, which is the anointed one of God. And Jesus said about that, flesh and blood hasn't revealed this to you, but my Father who's in heaven. I don't know exactly how this works, but I know when you read about Lydia in Acts 16, Paul was preaching, teaching, and she was listening, and it says the Lord opened her heart. That's what I want God to do for me. When I'm studying, when I'm researching, when I'm trying to, what do you want me to preach this Sunday? What do you want me to do in class? And sometimes I find something that I think, well, I don't know if I found that or if it was shown to me. Because I don't know if you've noticed or not, I'm not that smart. And who is? We're just trying to work together with the Lord, are we not? Isn't that what you're trying to do from one day to the next? You're trying to figure out what's the right thing to do and do it. And then you think to yourself, well, you know, I need to pray. Well, what do we need to say in this prayer? Well, I'm not exactly sure. And by the way, what right do I have to pray? But the way I've been living and talking and what I was doing yesterday, I don't know if the Lord wants to hear from me anymore. You just question yourself all the time because this is the way our lives are. We know we don't measure up, which is exactly why Jesus came in the first place. He didn't say from heaven, y'all straighten up down there and the ones that are good I'll come get later, because there ain't any of us any good. And so here's Gideon. Where do we find Gideon in the beginning of this account? He's hiding. He's hiding from his enemies. And God's angel comes to him, and he doesn't berate him. He doesn't mock him or belittle him for hiding. He just, well, what's he call him? Valiant warrior. It's like, you know, I read that and I kind of chuckled myself. Okay, well, What's God telling us when he has his angel call him that? Same thing he would tell us, I believe. I'm not talking about who you are. I'm talking about who I could make you. You'll tie on with me. I'll take you places you never would have imagined. I'll show you victories you never could have seen coming. And that's exactly what God has done with everybody who's put their faith in him throughout the book. Even a fellow named Lazarus, and I'm not talking about the Lazarus in John 11 that Jesus raised from the dead. I'm talking about the Lazarus who was laid at the rich man's gate, covered with sores, and the dogs came and licked his sores. And why was he laid at the rich man's gate? I'm assuming because he couldn't get there on his own power. But what happens when Lazarus dies? Luke 16, you can read it for yourself. The angels come and they carry him into the bosom of Abraham. Contrastingly, there's a rich man who apparently trusted in himself and his riches. All the things that Jesus says, don't do that. He didn't have any treasure laid up in heaven, so when he died, he lifted up his eyes in torment. In the world, we would look at both of those guys, and we would see the blessings of the one, and we may be tempted to conclude that's the guy that God is looking after. And we'd see the horrible condition of the other, and we would say, God doesn't care about that guy. Look at him. And we might be tempted to say, as we see the 300, before anything else has happened, we might be tempted to say, this guy's an idiot. He thinks he's going to go against all these Midianites with 300 guys. What kind of weapons does he have? And then somebody says, well, some torches and pitchers and trumpets. And God, what are you talking about? And then, next thing you know, the Midianites are defeated and they are fleeing. And their power has been drained completely, and their leaders are beheaded, and those guys are carrying the severed heads of the bad guys to Gideon to say, here, check this out. Now, what's going to happen in the next chapter? What are we going to be told about? Have you read any farther? What's that? Okay, they chase the Midianites. That's what happens. That's what finishes up in chapter 7. But have you read into chapter 8? Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, they're still routing them. But there's going to be a controversy come up. And this happens all the time. What's that? Yep. There's always the naysayers, there's always the complainers, and God is still calling us to have faith. Put your faith in me. It may not look like this is going to work, it might sound silly to you, but it will work. Has anyone ever mocked you for believing in somebody who died on a cross? It's happened to me. The what do they call it? I should write it down. The flying spaghetti god of the sky. That's who they say I have worshipped. And okay. Say what you want. I'll pray for you, seriously, because I fear for people who have that kind of a spirit and that kind of an attitude and say those kinds of things, because I know what's coming. I've been alive long enough to see this. This is what works. This is what's real. It's like Jesus said in John 7:17. Well, go there and take a look at it and then make this application to Gideon and what we have read about Gideon. Because this is a statement that Jesus makes that could easily be overlooked and missed, but it is, I think, very profound. Simply this, John 7:17, if anyone is willing to do his will, he will know of the teaching, whether it is of God or whether I speak from myself. What's Jesus saying there? Do you want to know if this is from God? Do it. Do it. How did Naaman know that what he was told about his leprosy was from God? when he came up after that seventh dipping, how did Naaman start out? He was angry. He had come down from Syria, captain of the Syrian army, came down to the prophet Elisha, and Elisha did not even do what? He didn't even come out of his house. He didn't come out and show this guy any honor. He said, tell him to go dip in the Jordan seven times. Now tell me if that shows any honor. What's your problem, Naaman? Oh, I got leprosy. Oh, here's how to fix that. Go down to the Jordan River and dip yourself seven times.
And it's because the solutions are not, there never are solutions.
Exactly.
There are solutions, and so they require faith. And so someone who hasn't cultivated faith throughout life can't arrive at faith all of a sudden at the end. You know, if you're a committed non-believer, there's usually not a deathbed conversion. You know what I'm saying? It happens, but it's very rare. I think of Christopher Hitchens,
mm-hmm.
the atheist, the famous atheist mm-hmm. Author, and so on and so forth. He got cancer. Going to die, terminus, the cord. And he had a special clause put into his will and his, what do you call it, the teenager?
Executor?
Not your executor, but your, your health proxy.
Oh, okay.
You know, how I want to be treated, you know, and so on and so forth. He had a special thing in there that said that if at some point in his delirium, you know, and he was getting closer and closer to death, that if he asked to see a minister, or if he began talking about God, or if he, so on and so forth, to ignore that.
Wow.
Because that's just delirium. He absolutely wanted to be a non-believer to the very end of his death.
Mm.
He didn't want even the excuse of, in his delirium, reaching out to God, so he put it in his will. So I mean, if you don't want to believe,
mm-hmm. that's a decision.
You're not going.
Yeah. And think about how these things took place. Naaman dips seven times; he's cleansed of his leprosy. Gideon takes the 300 trumpets and torches and pitchers, and that works. Joshua marches around the city, and the walls fall. But imagine. As it happens today, somebody says to Gideon, well, you know, I'll take a trumpet, but I'm not going to carry a torch. You know, that's a long way up there. We don't really need a torch anyway. And I got faith in God. Well, here's the question. If you had faith in God, what would you be doing? You'd be carrying a torch. That's exactly what you do. And so today people say, well, I've got faith in Jesus. I don't need to fill in the blank. I don't need to go to church. I don't need to be baptized. I don't need to do whatever it is that Jesus teaches us to do in his New Testament. And then they claim that their salvation is by faith. And what they're actually showing is that they don't have any faith in Jesus. Because if they believe Jesus, they do what he said. Because that's what we see over and over and over and over again. When you read Hebrews 11, what's Hebrews 11 about? What's it called? It's called the Hall of the Faith Hall of Fame or something like that. And in every case, we're told about somebody who lived by faith, and by that faith, they did something. They did something. Nobody earned anything, but they all did something. Naaman did not earn to be cleansed from leprosy by dipping seven times. God gave him that. The Israelites did not earn Jericho by marching around it and blowing those trumpets. God gave them that. As a matter of fact, when did he give them Jericho? Before they even started. Gideon did not earn victory over the Midianites by blowing trumpets and breaking pitchers. But he was given that victory. When was he given the victory? Before he even did anything. But he did what he was supposed to do. If you can't see that and draw lessons from it for your own life, come see me. You need help. Tomorrow it's going to happen. Something's going to challenge your faith. Think about Gideon. Think about Joshua. Think about the apostles. Think about everybody that we read about in Scripture and what they faced and how much faith they had to have to hold on to what they were being told to do and how it worked out for them. And it'll work out for you and me. Paul?
One thing I've noticed about faith is that it's very much like a muscle, like any other muscle of your body.
That's right.
It grows through resistance. And so, you know, why is it so important to be faithful in those little things? You're covered by grace. You're not going to sort of sin your way out of grace, right? But it's because every time you successfully flex your muscle on those little things, you're technically building up a stronger faith muscle. So that when you do get that big trial, if you haven't been building that muscle up, it will wipe you out. It will take the faith out.
Right.
If you haven't been doing all the little things. It's not about earning it. It's not legalistic. It's purely just like physiology. If you don't work your muscle up, you can read all about it. You never hit the gym, you don't have any muscle. Well, it's the same thing with your faith. It's a muscle.
Right. Exactly right. And it's also why we should accept challenges when God puts them in front of us. He gives you a challenge to do something. Oh, I can't do that. That's too much. Do it. Do it. Accept the challenge. It may be his providence that's put that right in front of you. Just like an angel shows up to Gideon and says, hey, valiant warrior. And Gideon says, I ain't interested. Nope. He says, all right, what am I supposed to do? That's our class for tonight. Lord, love you. Thank you for being here.